and now book at bedtime. And in the absence of an actual corpse, the police are understandably sceptical of Carol Seddon's claims to have found a man's dead body on Feathering Beach. But Carol's new neighbour, Jude, is intrigued by the case and meanwhile has got herself invited to a coffee morning on the upmarket Shorelands Estate. Joanna Tope reads The Body on the Beach by Simon Brett.
Jude found the Shorelands Estate rather spooky as she walked through on the way to Barbara Turnbull's coffee morning. Though laid out spaciously, the predominant feeling it gave her was one of claustrophobia. And the 20 mph speed signs and crime alert in operation notices gave her the feeling of being under surveillance.
Ah, hello. You must be the new owner of Woodside Cottage. I'm Barbara Turnbull.
The house into which Jude was admitted had recently been improved by an expensive interior designer. But to Jude, the interior of Brigadoon had all the homely charm of an intensive care unit. Barbara Turnbull was in her 50s, and one of those women who'd spread sideways. Her hair, dyed a copper beach colour, had recently been cut short. She wore a broad green skirt and little matching waistcoat over a blouse with an ivy design. There were a lot of rings on her hands. In the large sitting room, she introduced Jude to about a dozen women whose average age was well over 60.
"And this is my mother, Winnie, Winnie Norton. Why don't you sit and have a chat, Jude, while I get you some coffee?"
Winnie Norton wore a tweed suit whose predominant colour was turquoise. There were even more rings on her hands than on her daughter's, but they hung loosely on the thin talons.
"So how do you like Feathering?" she asked.
"Seems fine so far," said Jude.
"Have you lived here long, Mrs. Norton?"
"All my life in the area, yes."
"But not all that time here at Shorelands?" "Oh, I don't live on the estate, no. I sold the big house after my husband died and bought one of those new flats near the Yacht Club. Spray Lodge, do you know where I mean?"
"Sorry," said Jude, "I'm still getting my bearings."
"It's a very nice block. The residents do have a degree of control over who moves in. Well, you have to these days, don't you? All kinds of people have got the money to move into somewhere like Feathering now."
"Yes," said Jude.
"So, do you have any grandchildren, Mrs. Norton?"
"No, Barbara and Rory didn't want children."
"Rory does very well," his mother-in-law went on. "Of course, he never really was our sort, but Barbara's done wonders with him."
Jude began to understand why Rory Turnbull needed his intravenous drip of whiskey down at the Crown and Anchor. Barbara Turnbull returned with the promised coffee.
"Now you mustn't monopolise our guest, Mummy. Do let me introduce you to some other people, Jude."
With the newcomer in her wake, she bore down on a bird-like woman with spiky hair, who turned out to be Sandra Chilcott.
"Jude, of course, I've heard all about you from Bill,"
she smiled coyly.
"Didn't take you long to find your way to the Crown and Anchor, did it?"
The woman beside Sandra asked,
"So, have you come down to Feathering in search of the quiet life?"
Sandra took her cue.
"If so, I'm not sure you've come to the right place. You'll find quite a lot of exciting things happen in Feathering."
"Really?" said Jude.
"Oh, yes. For example, this morning a dead body was found on the beach."
"You were right, Carol," said Jude. "There was a body on the beach. I met Bill Chilcott's wife Sandra at Barbara Turnbull's, and she'd heard about it on local radio."
"Yes," said Carol. "I heard it too. Everyone was talking about it at the supermarket."
They were standing, rather awkwardly, on Carol's doorstep.
"Well," said Jude at last, "there's bound to be something about it on the local news at lunchtime. Let's go and watch it at my place."
"What?
I'll knock up something for lunch, and we can open a bottle of wine. Come on."
As the set came to life, Carol took in the crammed contents of the room. Carved African animals jostled with brass handbells. Eggs of exotically veined stone lay beside Russian dolls and spinners' bobbins.
"Do sit down," said Jude, bustling in from the kitchen with a bottle of wine and two glasses.
The local news had just started. A gauche female newsreader was saying,
"A body was found on the beach at Feathering this morning by a woman walking her dog."
"Only one day late," Jude chuckled.
"The body," the newsreader droned on, "has been identified as that of 16-year-old...
Carol's jaw dropped.
"Aaron Spaulding."
A picture of the dead boy filled the screen. With his floppy blonde fringe and cheekily crooked grin, he looked nearer 12 than 16. The newsreader's voice continued drably,
"He lived in Feathering and had been missing for the past 24 hours. The cause of death has not yet been established, but the police have not ruled out foul play."
The two women looked at one another in amazement.
"But it's... I mean, it was a middle-aged man, the body I saw. No way could it have been mistaken for a teenager."
"It wasn't mistaken for a teenager," Jude said firmly. "Obviously, there have been two bodies on the beach."
"You don't think there's any connection between them, do you?"
Jude cocked her head thoughtfully to one side.
"There's no reason why there should be, but my instinct says there is.
Look, I'll get us some lunch, then we can start. What information do we currently have about your body on the beach?"
Carol shrugged.
"Only that he was wearing a life jacket that was printed property of Feathering Yacht Club."
Jude clapped her hands gleefully.
"Then it seems pretty obvious to me that the first thing we should do is go down to Feathering Yacht Club. We can say we saw some kids playing with one of their life jackets."
"But we can't do that," Carol objected.
"Why not?"
"Because we're not members."
"Oh, for heaven's sake," said Jude.
Soon the two women were striding along the high path beside the banks of the Feather towards the yacht club. It was low tide, and in the distance they could hear the rhythmic thumping of a tall pile-driving machine as it forced metal sheets down into the mud.
"Repairs to the sea wall," Carol explained. "What a day for them to start."
Rows of dinghies on trailers were regimented in front of the clubhouse building, all zipped up to the necks of their masts in sturdy fitted covers. Dennis Woodville, the vice commodore of the yacht club, let them in. He was a tall, angular man with a beaky nose and the sagging, papery skin of a heavy smoker.
"Wouldn't surprise me at all if they nicked one of our life jackets," he said after Jude had glibly produced her lie. "A lot of bloody kids always trying to break into this place, and into the boats," he gestured outside.
"Are there a lot of members?" asked Jude.
"Couple of hundred. They're all very active. We tend to be careful what kind of people we let in. Open the doors too wide and you can end up with all kinds of riff-raff."
"And it's all run by volunteers?" asked Carol.
"We club officials give our services free. Obviously, expenses taken when required by the treasurer and so on. That's Rory Turnbull, dentist chap. He's got problems at the moment. Club accounts don't tally, I'm afraid. It's a bloody accountant's cock-up. Of course, we pay the casual workers, cleaners, bar staff. Except we haven't any at the moment. Tanya finished today. Did you know? Large girl with this great industrial rivet punched through her nose. Suddenly reckoned the place was too far from Brighton. So she's going to look for something closer to home. Would either of you like a drink, by the way?"
"No, thank you,"
said Carol firmly, before Jude could lead her further astray.
"Anyway, I think I'd better be closing up for the afternoon, so if you'll excuse me."
Carol and Jude stood up. "By the way," said Jude, "did you hear about that poor boy who drowned, Vice Commodore?"
"What? Oh, yes, of course I did. Another Feathering floater."
"Sorry, what does that mean?"
"Bit of local folklore, I suppose. Tide here moves pretty damn fast. Anyone who's so unfortunate as to fall into the Feather, or so damn stupid as to jump into it, some cross-current gets them, and they usually turn up on Feathering Beach within 24 hours. There you go, feathering floaters. Nice to have a few local traditions, hey?
Outside, the weather had, if anything, worsened.
I wish you'd tell me what we're doing,
Carol complained. We're going back to where you found the body on the beach, said Jude firmly. The water's far enough out for us to see.
But the tide has washed over the area a good few times by now.
That's not the point. Eventually, they were standing at the foot of the breakwater. Out of sight now in the encroaching darkness, the relentless thudding of the pile-driver continued, eerily echoing off the sea. Jude looked at the water-filled indentation, at the foot of the breakwater's worn stanchions. It was here.
Yes, exactly here.
Well, there's no way the body was swept out to sea again.
If the incoming tide was going to move him at all, it'd move him further up the beach. He wouldn't be swept out till after the tide had changed. And the police came to see you too soon after they hadn't found the body for that to have happened. So,
Jude spun on her booted heel and looked round the semicircle towards the village. She stopped, facing Feathering Yacht Club.
I think we go back up there again.
It was nearly dark by the time they got back to the side gate to the yacht club. Jude looked round but could see no one in the enveloping gloom.
Okay, give me a leg up.
When they were both inside the compound, she said,
Now, let's have a look at all of these boats. What are we looking for?
A loose cover. A sign that one of them's been broken into.
You think the body might have been hidden in one of these boats?
The two women began to feel their way along the rows of dinghies. Above them, the wind sang in rigging, and steel halyards clattered endlessly against metal masts.
Could be something here,
Carol called out, pointing to the rim of a boat cover where a piece of rope dangled loose. She reached into her Burberry pocket for her torch, and a beam of light was quickly focused on the trailing rope. Freeing a corner of the cover, Jude flipped it back from the stern of the boat. The thin stream of light picked out a name in gold lettering. Brigadoon 2.
I wonder, said Jude, do you think there's a kind of person who would give their boat the same name as their house?
Oh, come on, let's get the rest of this cover off and have a look inside.
They found no body. Just the moulded fiberglass interior of a dinghy's hull. In the central channel, a rectangle of trapped water gleamed against the torchlight. Its surface was frozen hard.
Let's just check if there's anything under that water, said Carol.
With surprising ease, Jude hoisted herself over the side and into the dinghy. With a gloved fist, she hammered through the ice and reached down into the fetid water.
Look at this, she said triumphantly.
It was a large, robust Stanley knife, clicked in the open position. The torchlight gleamed on the shiny triangle of its blade.
Wonder how long that's been there.
Not very long, said Carol. Blade like that would rust very quickly. And the woman who drew a gun on me wanted to know if I'd found a knife.
Jude slowly turned the knife over in her hand. On the other side of the handle, words had been printed in uneven white paint strokes. They read, J. T. Carpets.
And Joanna Tope reads episode 4 of The Body on the Beach by Simon Brett tomorrow evening at 11:15.